Hello there, and welcome to Quite So. I am your host, Dada, and I want to remind you that this podcast airs every couple of Sundays on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. I want you to know that I'm not only a podcaster, but also a writer and a content creator. You can visit my website, dadaisms.com, and link to all my platforms. In all cases, you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok under at I Read Aloud. Today, I'm interviewing Khaleen Malik. She is a journalist initially who wrote about nuclear energy for about 11 years of her life. In the middle of the pandemic in 2020, she discovered human design while experiencing profound personal change. Her areas of expertise today in human design are personal human design readings, life pivots and reinvention, interpersonal relationship dynamics, parenting and kids design, HR and job alignment, and founder and leadership coaching. So if you want to find Colleen, she has her own website, Colleen by Nature. You can also find her, of course, on Instagram and TikTok, also under at Colleen by Nature. Now, what's interesting about Colleen is that she had a whole career in journalism before 2020. So if you also research Colleen Malik, you will find her also on social media under Colleen Malik. So Colleen Malik takes you to Colleen Malik, the journalist, and Colleen by Nature takes you to Colleen, the human design expert. Now, without further ado, let us get on with the interview. Hello, Khaleen Malik. I'm so happy to have you on my podcast today.
Hi, Huda. Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
You know, you have an eclectic background that is truly interesting. And the first thing that struck me when you reached out for the podcast was your name, Khaleen Malik. And I immediately thought, is she Lebanese? So are you? Do you have the heritage?
Yes, you guessed right. I do have the heritage indeed, and I am very proud of it.
You didn't live in Lebanon, though. You were born abroad, I believe.
Yes, so I was born in London. I lived in the UK for 16 years in total. I lived in the south of France for about 10, 11 years. I lived in Beirut just for 1 year, and I've lived in Dubai for 11, and now in Portugal for 2.5. So I've been a bit everywhere, but Beirut 1 year.
So how did you find the different cultures? I mean, living when you live for a stretch of time in a certain place, you get a good grab of the culture. So how is it different between, London, south of France, Dubai, and maybe even a bit about Beirut too?
There are some similarities with some of them, and there are a lot of differences with many of them. So I would say definitely the UK, what I love about London specifically, I would say, is that it is the most non-judgmental place I've ever experienced. I think in Europe and in most of the world, you can really just be yourself there. There is no judgment. I grew up in the 90s, so I would see punks in the streets, and that was just very normal. And I loved growing up around that because it really made me feel like, okay, so we can just be whatever we want here, without thinking of anything else in that sense. And then I moved to France, south of France, which is Mediterranean. So the topography is quite similar to Lebanon, which I loved. I realized, wow, people can live by the sea. This is a wonderful idea. And so I absolutely loved it. It was a bit tough, I would say, although I am quite, Frenchy, quote unquote, deep down. My Lebanese heritage doesn't really allow me to conform too much with the French. They are quite square to live with, and so that can be a bit difficult for a Lebanese. And so even though I grew up in Europe all my life, I mean, until I was 24, after that, I would say moving to Beirut was a lovely experience. It was a bit difficult, I would say, because I did live 24 years in Europe, and I'm used to laws and rules that people actually abide by and follow. And, obviously, as you know better than me, Lebanon is not quite that. It was fun to visit on holiday ever since I was young, and I loved that. But of course, living in quote unquote chaos, relatively speaking, to what I was used to at least, was not very comfortable. And I have to say, I think I developed anger management issues driving there for a whole year. But I mean, it was still a beautiful experience, you know. I mean, Lebanon will always, always hold a very special place in my heart. The food, the people, the environment. If you just take out, you know, the little, I would say, cancer that's in there, the rest is just, I mean, I would live there otherwise, you know. So it was a very good experience. I knew I wanted to work in the Middle East. So that's why I tried Beirut initially, because I have extended family there. And that didn't really work out. Even my parents were questioning my choices. And so I ended up moving to the UAE because, you know, to be able to have a decent salary and to be financially independent, the UAE was the only option in 2010 at the time, especially if you wanted to live in the Middle East. And so I ended up moving to Dubai, very different, very similar. Similar in one sense to the south of France. There's a lot of luxury. You know, you have all of that. It was great for work. It's great to meet a lot of people, but it's very transitory as a place. You have a lot of people coming and going, especially back then. And I think it was great, but definitely what I missed the most and what I had in every other country was nature. There is a type of nature there, but I grew up around parks and greenery and mountains, and I missed that. And so that's why I decided 11 years later to move back to the south of France. Obviously, I feel like I wasn't really ready to live again in the south of France. It's very quiet as a place. And so I ended up choosing Lisbon and Portugal, which suits me really, really well because it's a bit like a combination of all these places in one. You know, it looks identical to Lebanon almost in terms of the environment. Like if you go to, you know, the southern peninsula where there's Comporta and Setúbal, these places, they look very similar to Baghdad and Brumana, you know. So it's incredible. All the pine trees. Yes. And so I feel very at home in a way because the Portuguese are, you know, it's southern Europe. They're very similar to the Lebanese in terms of culture. And they're very heartwarming people, which is what we are like as well. And I would say also the fact that it's still a city in Europe. And so that kind of gives me my European side. You know, I always say I'm a bit too European for the Middle East, but I'm a bit too Arab for Europe. So, you know, or Phoenician, as we like to say. But like, you know, I have the best of both. I feel I try to get the best of both. And I feel like really Portugal gives me that in that sense. So, sorry, long answer to a short
No,
question.
it's a beautiful answer because you gave us you really took us
Thank
through
you.
the depths of it and I love the response. Thank you for sharing your journey
Thank
with
you.
us there. Now,
My
when
pleasure.
I introduced you before the podcast began, I said that you are a journalist initially, and recently you've shifted into spirituality and human design. So I would like to know a bit about your journalistic journey and what caused you to take this leap into human design.
In a nutshell, I would say I lost my mother about 13 years ago.
I'm
She
sorry.
was 57 and I was 27 at the time. Thank you. And so, obviously, as any human being, when you lose your mother, you just grow up instantly in that moment. And so, I think that up until that point in my life, I was very big on looking outwards, but never very keen on looking inwards. And that kind of made me think a lot about things in my life, about how, you know, stored emotions in your physical body can create illness, and how anything you hold on to really can lead to the personal deterioration. And I was kind of headed towards that path, I would say, given how, you know, tumultuous my character was growing up. And so that was a bit of a wake-up call where I just told myself, I don't want to follow in those footsteps. She even realized it, you know, before her death, that this, you know, her emotions were what caused all this. And so I just told myself, okay, I kind of made it my mission to go and discover, like, how can I, you know, make sure that I don't fall into that trap, let's say. And so I would say a few years, it took a while, it was a gradual process. I was still, you know, working as a journalist in the UAE. And of course, I loved the writing. That was my first love. I will always say that. And then I realized a few years later, I ended up meeting an energy healer. You know, I call her my energy therapist. And so by chance, met her through my aunt. And she actually We started doing sessions as I was a client, and we started doing these incredible sessions that just started really digging deep into my, whatever I had experienced in my life and the emotions I was holding on to, anything that was unprocessed, traumas, things like that. And this started around when I was 30, and I'm 40 now. So it's been about 10 years that I'm still her client. She actually helped to guide me in creating this life that I want for myself. So, for instance, I've been through so many ups and downs, I would say, in the last 10 years. I was engaged, and then I broke that off, and then I was married, and then I divorced, and then I had lost my mother. There were so many other things that played a part in, wow, what's happening? I'm in a spiritual washing machine right now. But it just led me to going deeper and deeper into myself, and so I started meditating, I started getting into yoga, I started discovering hypnosis. I became a mindfulness teacher where I did a course to lead meditations because I loved it a lot. And so I just started really doing these things in my free time. And then in 2018, I decided to freelance as a journalist. And that allowed me to actually, have more time to then discover what I loved. And I realized that what I love, and I feel like what everyone really loves and is meant to do in this life, is to be of service to others, And so for me, it started coming up in that way. I heard about human design through a friend at the time, and as a journalist, I love rabbit holes. I love to go into very complicated concepts and discovering them, and making them easy to understand, because as a journalist, that was actually my job. I mean, I used to write about nuclear energy, which I knew nothing about at the time. And so I feel like I was able to kind of harness this gift of like really diving into complicated concepts and then explaining them to people in an easy way. And so that's how I fell into human design. And then I did a course on crystal energy healing. So I'm also a crystal energy healer. And yes, I feel like I'm a bit of a, I juggle between, my freelance journalism career and my human design and my crystal healing. So that's essentially how I fell into this. But I mean, fell into this is an interesting word because I think I was always meant to do this.
I find very interesting that your main field in journalism was nuclear energy. Is it still that as well now today?
Yes.
Yeah, because
No. So I've always, yeah.
no, I'm just
Tell me,
wondering
tell me.
because like the nuclear energy and the healing, they're kind of a little bit,
Yes.
you know. So I
Completely.
wanted to
The point
help.
in common is energy. 100%. That's what's interesting. I mean, I remember I always tell people I fell into news. I was never meant to write for a newspaper. I wanted to be a feature writer. My aim was I wanted to tell stories of young Arabs in the Middle East who were doing something for their country. That was my passion. And I fell into news because I absolutely needed to leave Lebanon because my parents were telling me you need to come back to France if you don't find a real job. And so I was like, I'm just gonna, find a job. And I got a job actually at my top pick in the UAE. It was still the best English speaking newspaper in the region. So I was happy about it. I just told myself, get your foot in the door and then see what happens. So I ended up staying in news for 8 years. But, as every young reporter, you start off writing about everything, health, education, you're just a general reporter. My aim was, my beat, as we call it, is I wanted to write about diplomacy, security, defense, and nuclear energy. It's a beat that you can write about, and they all came together at that newspaper. And so I remember after 5 years, I got it and I was so happy about it because, you get to travel a lot. I went to Japan, I went to South Korea, I went to The Hague. Like there were so many things. I went to Vienna. Like it was incredibly enriching as an experience in my career. And I found it very interesting. I do have this very logical side to me that loves understanding these concepts as well. But of course, I also have this very creative side that loves the mystical as well, right? Energy healing and all that. So I am a bit of these two extremes, and I feel like that's how I ended up in this. Now, of course, I don't write really about these things anymore. Since I started freelancing, I allowed myself then to write about anything I wanted to write. So I went more into technology, education, entrepreneurship. What the beauty about being a freelance journalist is you can wear so many different hats. So, I would work for think tanks to write their research, or universities, or PR agencies, or the government. Like you name it, I can do it pretty much, as long as it's content generated. And so that's what I do now, pretty much. It's different ad hoc projects here and there, and it keeps life interesting.
True, true. I mean, I find that human beings have so many skills, and to just limit yourself to one thing is limiting.
I
So,
agree. I totally
for
agree.
better of a lack word, lack of a better word.
I agree.
Anyway, I want to take us a little bit back to what you said about during your 10 years of your healing journey. You got engaged and you separated, you got married and you got divorced. Because, I had the same
Yes.
experience of getting married and divorced during my healing journey. And that's why I
Wow.
want to ask you this question. Why is it that when we are on this journey, we think that we've arrived, we think we have chosen the right partner, but then it all backfires and it's not the right fit at all. Do you have an answer to that? Because I'm always, wondering about this. So what's your theory on it?
Yes. So for me, I see it as, I don't really see it as a destination where I arrive. I think the journey is actually the destination. And I feel like people will accompany you on that journey. Some of them will stay, some of them will not. I feel like definitely, especially when you first start off your spiritual journey, you are still trying to learn and understand who you are, let alone your relationship with someone else.
True.
And so, in general, in the very beginning, because life is a mirror, you will attract your mirror in that very moment. And then that mirror has a choice with you to grow together or to grow apart. So it's a bit difficult because usually in the beginning of a spiritual journey, you are still finding your bearings. And so it's hard to, a foundation with a relationship needs to be really solid to be able to thrive. And so because you might be a bit on shaky ground, so might be your relationship, right? So
True.
I feel like it's very hard in the very beginning. It's not impossible, but it's very hard in the very beginning of your spiritual journey, I would say, to have someone who will grow with you, unless they're really like totally on the same page,
Yes,
which
yes.
is very difficult. But I would say later on in life, as you start to learn who you are in that very moment and you get to know yourself on a deeper level, at least, because it's a lifelong journey. There is no destination in my view. But you start attracting, I would say, healthier relationships. For me, that has been the case, and it's been incredible to see that. I didn't even know healthy relationships existed, to be honest. I was always in somewhat toxic ones, but because I was in turmoil. And so I realized that the more at peace I became with myself, the more I attracted people who were bringing peace into my life. And that was wonderful. It's not to say that there are no arguments or, areas of improvement. No, but there is a willingness from both sides to grow together. And I find that that is the single most beautiful thing in the world. I mean, for me, it's my deal breaker in relationships, because I divorced and because I was engaged even before that. But if you don't want to grow together, then it's best we don't even start. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's at least
Exactly.
how I go about it.
No, that is so true because,
But I hope that answers the
that's
question.
what I found was that you cannot save a relationship by yourself. You need two people to be
No.
willing to work on it for it to work out. And so, yeah, even if you put
100%.
your all in it, in the end, you're destroying yourself in the process because it just won't work.
Of course, it ends up being self-sacrifice. I always say it takes two to tango. This is
True.
very true.
So I'm just so happy that you haven't given up on love, though, that you are, still an
Never. I
advocate
love
for.
love.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'm gonna
Yes.
take us on to a bit of a different path. My listeners who are with us today might not know what human design is.
So basically, human design has five energy types. Each of them have a unique way of using energy and interacting with life. This is an energy we are born, like we bring with us when we are born. Okay. And so I'll tell you a little bit about each one, but basically, Manifestors, they're about 11% of the world's population. They are here to initiate new ideas, to spark new ideas. They are basically the trailblazers. They move very fast. They inspire other people, in a nutshell. Okay. But they don't have sustainable energy. So they need to rest in between. When they feel the urge to go, they should just go. Right. And I always tell manifestors the most important thing to do is just inform the people that you love about what you want to do and then go off and do it, because manifestors will tend to not necessarily inform, and that could impact the people that they love who might get offended in that sense. But if they want peace in their life, that's the best way to go about it. All right. And then you have generators. Generators are around 33, 35% of the world's population. They are like the builders. So they light up when they do what they love to do. And that literally spills out of them to other people. And it's just like contagious. And the thing about generators is that they do have access to this life force energy that we mentioned. So they can go morning until night. They don't stop unless they collapse or they sleep. And that's why, yes, it's so important for them to do what they love to do, because it's very hard for them to stop an experience halfway, even if it's unsuitable or inadequate for their nature. So to avoid them being angry or frustrated, it's so important to start off with, is my gut telling me yes or no, in a nutshell. Then we go to the manifesting generators, which is the hybrid of the manifester and the generator, basically. So they're also around 35, 33% of the world's population. They have the same, energy in terms of they can go morning to night, like the generators. They don't stop unless they collapse or they sleep, but they also have the manifestor energy. So they can also go off and initiate things. Okay. So they are just multi-passionate doers. They move very quickly. They're the quickest energy type. They have the biggest energetic engine. They thrive when they follow what excites them. They are meant to have a lot of different passions. So they're meant to do a lot of different things, not at the same time, but they can have many different passions. So I'm a manifesting generator, as you can see. Between all the things I do in my life, that's a pretty good depiction of what a manifesting generator is. So that's the most important thing. And so they can course correct halfway. They can drop something if they don't like it in the middle and move on. And then we move to projectors, which are around 20, 21% of the world's population. They are the quintessential guides of the world. They are here to see very, very deeply into others and to show us a smarter and a more efficient way of doing things in our lives. And the thing with projectors is that, like manifestors, they don't have access to this sustainable energy. So they need naps, they need to rest. They're meant to work 3 hours a day because they are as efficient in 3 hours as the rest of us is in 12. So a smaller energetic battery, but a lot more efficient. But yes, they're here as the observers of life and the guides of life, but they should only help when help is being asked of them. Otherwise, it will backfire. All right. And then the last one is the reflectors. So the reflectors are the rarest type. They are less than 1% of the world's population. And they are what we call the mirrors of the world. They either absorb everything around them or they can be wise and reflect it. But it's very difficult if they are not aligned with who they are, because they are very, very prone to absorbing people's thoughts, emotions, pressure, fears, anything really. So it's very good for them to spend time alone to discharge all of this energy from the world. Because whenever they do that in a healthy way, then they can actually reflect the overall, like, health, let's say, of the community around them or the environment around them. That's what they're here to do. They're very, very wise beings when they are aligned. And so, in a nutshell, these are the five types. I hope that that explains it well enough.
Actually, I've done my design chart, which is like just a one pager, and I discovered our manifestor, which
Yeah.
after now what you've said, I understand completely what you're saying, because
Oh.
recently I have understood that I need to rest, and I burn out easily, and I cherish my
Yes.
rest now. But when I used to be the workaholic, when I used to work in companies before as a paralegal or even as a teacher, I used to
Tough.
finish work so quickly, People would take advantage of me because I am such a fast worker, and I would literally be doing the job of five people in the end, and I would hate my job in the end, of course. And yes, I didn't understand. I used to get bored, first of all, as well at the job. There's not enough stimulation, and at the same time I would burn out. So it was like this weird combination. But then again,
100%.
if you're working in the workforce and you're working with the daily grind, how can you get your employer to understand, how to work with your energy, to appreciate your energy, to take, to benefit the most from who you
Yes.
are? This is that,
100%.
people don't care about these things, I think, these days, or at least until
It's
now they don't.
slowly, yes, it's slowly coming. For instance, in the States and in Dubai, I know some places they're actually using human design to hire people, because that's exactly it. It's not everyone is meant to do a 9-to-5. Not everyone is meant to do that specific job. Some people are meant to be consultants. Some people are meant to, so that's exactly it. I mean, it's slowly coming, but it's definitely a concept that is so ahead of the time that we're in now. But it's, I mean, I'm staying hopeful that it will come into place because it's exactly what you described. It's so needed, you know?
And there's another thing that I was thinking about as well. If you are unaware of your energy and you don't fulfill yourself through that energy, what happens to you? Do you live like a depressed life? Do you,
Yes.
what happens?
So every energy type has a self theme and a not self theme. So like how to know you're on the right track in life and how to know you're not. So for generators and manifesting generators, that's frustration. You will end up feeling frustrated. How to know you're on the right track? You will feel satisfied. That's your epitome of happiness. For a manifester, peace is the epitome of happiness. You know, otherwise it's anger. That's how you know. You know, projectors is bitterness. That's how you know, or it's success. So every single one has one of them. Reflectors are, I believe, surprise is a good one, and disappointment is, the not self theme. So that's how you know you are not honoring your energy and you are not operating as you were intended to in this life.
I also found during my research that there are some like lines, such as like 1/4, 2/5. What are these symbolic of?
So these are profiles. Basically, there are 12 different combinations of profiles in human design. What they describe is your personality archetype, for example. So it's how you learn, how you connect, how you express yourself in the world. It's your conscious side and your unconscious side. One number, the first number is your conscious side. It's how you see yourself. The second number is your unconscious side. That's how the world sees you. And so there are six lines, six numbers. And so that's why there are 12 combinations, pretty much. So the line one is called the investigators. So they love deep research. They build confidence through knowledge. So they're the knowledge seeker in a nutshell. The line two is what we call the hermit. They need a lot of alone time, but they really shine when they're naturally called out for their gifts. They like anything that's inherently fun or playful. The line three is the quintessential life experimenter. They learn through trial and error, and they gain wisdom through experience. The line four is what we call the opportunist. They have the biggest heart in human design. They build their life through relationships and community connections. So the quality of their life is based on the quality of their relationships. The line five is what we call the teacher or the problem solver. They have a rescuer energy about them. They offer practical solutions that help others. They're very good at fixing stuff, at saving people. And the line six is the role model. So the line six is the number that loves wisdom, that loves nature, that loves also solitude. It lives its life in three stages. It learns, it observes, and then it eventually guides through this embodied wisdom that it gains through its life. So those are the six lines in a nutshell.
Thank you for giving us like this brief insight into it. When I was
My
actually
pleasure.
trying to find my chart, what I was requested, I mean, the information that was requested of me was my date of birth, where I was born, a time of birth, so on and so forth. And which is something that usually astrologers ask for. And when I got my
Yes.
chart as well, I had all sorts of planetary, signs and with, different symbols and whatnot. So what is the difference really between, I mean, how can, I mean, I can see from what you said the difference between astrology and human design, but is there a similarity between them? And if there's similarity, what is it? And what is the similarity as well?
So they're related, but they're not exactly the same in the sense that astrology maps planetary influence, let's say, while human design combines ancient wisdom traditions that include astrology. So there's the I Ching, the Kabbalah Tree of Life, the Hindu chakra system, quantum physics, science, and astrology. And it brings it all together to create this energetic blueprint. So it's less about prediction, it's more about how your energy works day to day, like mechanics a bit. So astrology basically tells you what energies influence you, while human design tells you how your energy actually works in the world, if that makes sense.
It's more inward, inside out human design, I think.
Exactly. I would say that.
The thing is that the theory of human design was developed in 1987 initially. Canadian Alan Robert Krakauer, who was later adopted as Ra Uruhu. And he said that the theory came to him, over a few days, when he was in the state of meditation and so on and so forth. We didn't really hear much about human design, since he created the theory, but we've been hearing about it more in the past maybe 5 years or so. What happened, in your opinion, that this theory is alive today? Give us your insight on it.
To be honest, I think it's just the evolution of humanity. I think that definitely when he channeled it back in the late 80s, because that's how he received it, it was way ahead of its time. Way ahead of its time. The scientific part of human design was only proven 10 years later after he channeled it. So that's to show you how much ahead of its time it was. So, like I said, it was ahead of its time. But at the same time, there is a bit of a new wave of awareness amongst people. Today I'm sure you see it as well. So especially since COVID, there has been a shift in people, and it's a wonderful one, and I'm happy about it. But today, people really crave tools that blend science and spirituality in a really grounded and practical way, or anything that bridge like. That bridges intuition and logic, let's say. Something that's spiritual but still practical. And this is something I love to do, but human design actually offers exactly that because it gives language to what many of us have always felt, intuitively, let's say. I always tell my clients, I'm putting words to your experiences. You see what I mean? So I definitely feel that it's resonating with a lot of people because I think as a collective, we have been through a lot since 2020, and we are still going through a lot, and people are looking for ways to help themselves. And this is a very practical, on the ground way of, helping yourself.
Well, that's a beautiful way of seeing it. And I agree with you. Yes, there has been this amazing shift since COVID, and I hope it just grows from here and doesn't, people don't slide back into the old ways because of need or the trend. But I still feel that despite there being several creators now who do post about human design, you still find that the information is still limited, and you still find, even if you want to get a chart, like when I got my chart, it was like something initial. I had to pay like 320 euros to get like a full from this website. I don't know, there are probably several, but this one, in order to get my full description or whatever, blueprint. So do you feel that there's like a bit of gatekeeping at the moment? And if so, why?
So I wouldn't necessarily say gatekeeping or like it's secret. It's just that human design is something that's very, very deep. And also because it's relatively new. So because it's deep and it's layered and it's new, most of it, I would say, is best learned directly through, people. Through that guidance. So I don't necessarily think it's about gatekeeping. I think it's about ensuring that people understand it correctly rather than piecing together fragmented information online. And I've seen it with some of my clients. I mean, not my own clients, but potential clients, I would say, who started off before doing readings with me, that, they would talk to me about ChatGPT even and going there. And yes, ChatGPT can give you some information, but it will never, ever tell you a full reading in its accuracy. It was even getting some things wrong, which is alarming, to be honest, because a lot of people just trusted blindly. So it's important to take that with a pinch of salt. But because human design is layers upon layers upon layers, it's very easy to misunderstand if you're only skimming the surface. You see what I mean? So that's why these live readings exist with some people, because, it's about helping people interpret it correctly for their unique chart in that sense, And it's
That's very
still new, so it's coming to life.
No, that's very interesting to know, really, because yeah, it feels like it's a journey, like as if you're going to a psychologist, and there's something about that throughout this
Yes,
journey.
100%.
Actually, you've put on your website and on your brochure that you help people understand themselves better. You help parents, with their children. You help people in relationships to understand each other different, okay, better. And you help
Take
people
your time.
understand their careers better or their career paths better, and so on and so forth. So basically, you are doing the job of a psychologist in a sense. And so can you give us like an example or two about, let's say, like parents and children? How can you help a parent better raise their child through this blueprint?
100%. I would say, I mean, I like to use the example of the manifestor, because the manifestor child is, from a young age, with conventional education and ways of raising children back then, it's one that gets the most blocked, unfortunately, from its manifesting abilities. Why? Because manifestors, you should not tell them no or don't. And usually, when we're growing up as children, the only things we hear are no and don't. And so, what that happens is with manifestor children, you block them from their natural abilities. They end up suppressing who they are or being very rebellious about it. And so, when I teach parents with, for instance, a manifestor child, how their child's energy works, they can then guide it in the sense that they understand how to speak to a manifestor child. For instance, instead of saying, you can't, if the manifestor child wants to eat cake, instead of saying, no, you can't eat this cake, you would say, you can eat as much cake as you want after you finish your dinner. I want to run down the street. Not no. Yes, you can run as far as you want, but not past that house. So it's about how to phrase it, because then you are teaching each child, I mean, not teaching, but you are guiding them. You are meeting their needs, and that you're giving them that space to grow into who they're meant to be. To understand, for example, that a projector child needs naps. Not even an adult needs naps as a projector. It cannot, you can't put activities all day long for a projector child. So this is really just so important to know, because a lot of people will say, oh, the terrible twos, and everyone's the same at 2 years old. No, they're not. I mean, I don't have children, forgive me, but they're not. In human design terms, they're not.
Sorry, I'm an aunt and I have four, kids between nieces and nephews, and each one is totally different personality, and we
Exactly.
cannot treat them the same.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's not about molding children, it's about guiding them. You see what I mean? And that's going to help them to live really in attunement with who they are.
And so if two people come to you in a relationship, they're having like a bit of a rocky road, how can you help them mend their relationship?
So what we do with relationships in human design is that we actually explore compatibility, emotional timing. We show couples how their energies interact, because you can see both their charts and you can know together how they interact, where there could be potential conflict. When you're with one person and you feel a certain type of energy, and when you're with someone else, you feel another type of energy. That's what we're talking about. It's called electromagnetic channels. And so we can know immediately where conflict can arise, where harmony can arise, where there's an attraction from the beginning, where there's potential conflict. And this helps save so many relationships, so many marriages, so many. I mean, I think it's a game changer even to understand that how this person operates exactly that way, and to never take it personally. It's not actually about you. Sometimes they're not even conscious that that's how they operate.
So
Neither are
true.
you. And so, right? So it's so once you understand, you stop taking things personally, you stop being on the defensive, and you understand, okay, how can we work with this? The awareness is what shifts it all. That's all
Yes.
it is. It's as simple as that. I mean, as simple as that. It's a big
No,
word,
but still,
but it really is. There's
I mean,
it's not rocket science.
I believe that initially the fact that a couple arrived in your office is a good sign that they're both willing to do something about it, because so many times they just refuse to go to some to seek
A lot
help.
of times the women will gift it to their spouse as a gift initially. And then once, the spouse does it, the husband or the boyfriend does it, and they understand, oh wow, actually they get very, very interested in it. And then they're kind of sold on the idea of, okay, yes, let's do that, But yes,
That's
it's definitely gaining interest and momentum in that sense.
So we were discussing before astrology and human design and some similarities there. And I'm sure there are people who would say, what is this? If you don't believe in astrology, they may not believe in human design. And what do you say to these skeptics on that point?
I always say, you don't need to believe in human design. It's not a belief system. It's merely information. And so try it and observe your life. For me, I always say, don't judge something until you try it. Because when people apply it in their lives, they usually see these really tangible shifts that, for me, I would say they speak much, much louder than any explanation, to be honest. But like I said, it's not a religion, it's not a cult, it's not a belief system. It is simply information, and you choose what to do with it.
Well, I'm going to ask the final question. How did human design impact your life?
In many incredible ways. I mean, human design completely changed the way I make decisions. I'm meant to wait before taking decisions, and I used to be the complete opposite. So most decisions I would take in my life were the worst for me. I also understand, I mean, it helped me to relate to people as well. Like, I stopped trying to force things. I started trusting my own timing. It really gave me this permission to be myself, to understand what has been conditioning in my life and what is actually my true nature. And then I'm able to honor my strength and how my energy actually works instead of trying to fit into what, the world expects me to be. But yes, it's helped me to understand my emotions, my relationships, even how I work, how I rest. It allowed me to have a less, I would say, self-judgment. Brought me a lot more compassion for myself, for other people. I don't see really people as being difficult anymore. I mean, unless they're specifically trying to be, but I see them more as different designs, So honestly, it's been less about changing who I am and more about remembering who I've actually always been. Like, everything that I understand about myself and human design makes complete sense to me. It resonates on such a cellular level. It's just improved my life in every possible shape, way, or form.
That is wonderful. I mean, I do look forward to knowing more about myself as a manifester as well. Thank you so much, and I hope we'll keep in touch as well.
I hope so too. I'm sure we will.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.